Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Today we're going back 35 years to July 1981, when a race riot involving hundreds of young men broke out in Liverpool. It was the first time that British police used CS gas to control civil unrest in mainland Britain. I've been speaking to a man who took part in the riot.
Here come some of the cars out now. There are about three or four of them driving fast up the road. These people are
Liverpool 8, or Toxteth as it came to be known in the media, a run-down part of Liverpool with a mixed-race community, poor housing and few jobs.
And there's just a lot of black smoke coming from one of the places down the...
In July 1981, it turned into a battlefield.
The Grove Street area of Upper Parliament Street, they're actually a police in a rank there with their riot shields.
The older residents of the area didn't understand why.
And did you believe it would happen?
No. I would understand if they had some kind of row with the police.
But the younger people knew. Jimmy Jagney was 17 when the riots broke out, and he and his friends were afraid of the police. When he was just 12 and a keen student, he'd been stopped by police on his way home from school.
And he asked me in a kind of gruff voice, you know, where I was going. I explained to him that I'd just come from school and I was on my way home. So anyway, he got out of the car and he walked towards me. And as he's walking towards me, he accused me of being a liar. He opened my bag, went through it, and he told me that I had to come with him to the police station.
But instead, he drove Jimmy to some wasteland and racially abused him.
He kept pointing out that kids like me needed to be removed from the street before we got old enough to break the law. And then he kicked me so that I fell over, and I fell over into a pool of water. And then he picked up my bag and emptied the contents into the same pool of water. He got into the car laughing, and then the two of them just drove off.
Police at the time had the power to stop and search anyone they thought looked suspicious. In early July 1981, a young black man was arrested. There was a skirmish and three policemen were injured. The next day, the atmosphere in Toxteth was charged and there was a big police presence. By early evening, a full-scale battle had begun.
There were lines of police with shields. And there were all these guys. There must have been about 150 to 200 guys just throwing bricks from one side and charging with scaffolding, trying to penetrate the line of shields. There were vehicles burning everywhere. There were people running backwards and forwards. There were members of the press. There were community leaders who I recognised. There was a couple of priests. And these flames licking high from these burning vehicles. And people literally trying to kill each other. I mean, there were no holds barred. And I thought, what the hell is going on? And there were friends running backwards and forwards. The only response I get from was, come on, get down to the front, get down to the front. What are you doing standing here? I thought, no, I can't do this. It's, you know, because my mind, I'm not a violent kid. You know, I read books.
But then he spoke to a friend and asked him why he was joining in.
You know, he just reminded me of all the grief that we'd been through. And he explained to me, we'd just never, ever get an opportunity to show these guys, if you're going to make our lives hell, if we're going to end up in jail for walking on our streets, then let's go to jail for the right reason. And that's for sticking one on them first. I didn't relate to the solution, but I understood the sentiment because we feared every day. And I went to bed and I slept on this. I ended up at some point convinced I can't not be with my friends going through this. Britain was a completely different place back then to what it is now. We had no one listening to us. It was up to us to take control of our fate. We had to do something.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, October 16th, 2016. So I have been told this is our global Sunday talk on racism. We do this once a month on Sunday. We try to make sure we include our listeners from other parts of the world outside the United States. I think it's important to have a global perspective, understanding of racism, white supremacy, just to compare, contrast what whites are doing in different parts of the world. Some things are the same, some things are a little different, just to kind of check that out. The audio clip you heard at the beginning, that was from the BBC. They were talking about quote-unquote rioting that took place in Liverpool in 1981. We have touched on the city of Liverpool quite a few times this year. I know with the book The Zong about the slave ship where they just began throwing black people overboard to drown them, over 100 black people. This is in the late 1700s, 18th century. But we just talked about that. Liverpool was a big city in terms of slave trading, enslaving black people on the continent. But this incident that happened in 1981, I played that because it's Black History Month in England right now. And just that was something I'm very eager, very excited to hear some of our listeners who are in England and are experiencing this, just to kind of hear what's been happening with that. Folks that are listening, if you all have questions you would like to ask, the number to dial 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you have any questions you would like to ask, topics that you would like to hear our listeners touch on, or just anything that you've seen that you think is important that we should think about. I think at least some of the folks that we have with us thus far, and I might have to dial to nab a few other folks. I think we have our caller in Austria, African 1884. Are you with us, sir?
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Right poorly, but glad to hear from you today, sir. Always enjoy having you on the program with us. I think we have Mr. Fox. Are you with us, sir?
I'm present.
Outstanding. Always good to hear from you, sir. And one of our first time visitors. She's not a first time participant, but first time being on the Global Sunday Talk on Racism, June. She's also with us and joining us from Britain. June, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Greetings. Hi.
Grand. Great to hear from everybody. Just to kind of start things off, I'll start with our listeners that are in Britain, and then I'll get African 1884 last. We'll start with June since she's new. It's Black History Month in the UK, so they tell me. The incident in Liverpool, were you familiar with that? Were you in England at the time that that happened? Any thoughts on that? And then with Black History Month, have you participated in anything, and what have you seen with that, I guess, celebration that's gone on for the first couple of weeks of October?
And that was the first time I'd actually heard that, the clip, the Liverpool clip, actually. Yeah, it's shocking, as always, to hear these incidents ongoing. But yeah, no, I'd never heard of that before, so I wasn't aware of it. But I know there was, you know, there's always stuff that's been happening in the UK alongside. I mean, obviously the percentage of black people in the UK is a lot less than it is in the UK, in the US, but it's still very much, you know, it's still going on in the UK. And Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, in terms of Black History Month, it's actually been really great. It's been really nice. It's been a little bit frustrating for me because there's so much stuff going on. I support for choice, you know, so it's quite, it can be quite difficult to kind of navigate which events to go to. Last night I went to see Queen Afua, which was really, really great. It was really, really great to see her. I believe it's been 7 years since she came to the UK. And, yeah, it was just amazing just to see and hear her talk about her books. And she, they did like a presentation thing at the beginning about her book, The Angry Vagina. And, yeah, it was important to see how so many things in, you know, abusive relationships and the way that we kind of, the relationship that we have with our own sexuality, how that kind of impacts how we
Sorry about that, June.
It's okay.
Andrew?
Glad Hello there.
Yes, sir. Glad we can hear you. If you could watch that. Oh, great. That would be awesome, sir. Thank you so much. I am so sorry, June. Andrew to the line. If you could restart with what you were hearing from Queen Afua. She was talking about her books and then where you got interrupted.
Yeah, yeah. They did like a presentation thing at the beginning about her book, The Angry Vagina, where they had people doing spoken word bits from the book. And yeah, it was very powerful. It was very powerful just understanding how, you know, how different people's relationships with their sexuality and how that impacts self-esteem and how that impacts how we relate to each other. And, you know, as women, she's just basically talking about womb wellness and how important it was. And it was very powerful. It was very, very powerful. And it was packed out. You know, there were so many people there. And so it was great. You know, I saw a lot of friends there. There was a lot of stalls there selling beautiful jewellery. And it was an amazing space. Yeah, so I'm really glad that, that I was able to attend. I went with my daughter as well, actually, because it was important for me to have her there to sort of be in that space just to see what was going on. And obviously because it was a Black space with particularly about Black women, and just to see, you know, there was a lot of people that we knew there as well. So it was just important for me to bring her into that space and to witness it as it was. So it was really good. It was really good. Yeah, so the Black History Month thing has been really good. That's kind of been the highlight for me so far. Yeah, so it's been good. It's been really good.
Spectacular. I'm so glad you were able to take your Black daughter to sing Queen Afua. And seems like a central element, self-respect and yeah. Health and respecting your reproductive organs, that is a big part of self-respect. That is something I think Dr. Welsing would completely co-sign on. Let's see, kind of get everybody's opening statement, and then we'll touch other topics as well. And folks might even want to hear more about what you experienced yesterday with Queen Afua. Mr. Fox, you're also in England. Were you there at the time of the, I guess, unrest that happened in Liverpool, 1981? Any thoughts on that? And then the same question about Black History Month over there. What have you experienced? What have been some of the things, if you've seen anything?
Sorry, you're going to have to start that again. I'm having technical problems. You kind of cut out. Can you say that part again?
Absolutely.
I said 81. That's all I heard.
Oh, okay. We opened the program today. We had an audio segment on the rioting that happened in Liverpool about policing and just racism, basically. Were you familiar with that incident in 1981? Do you have any thoughts on that? And then it's Black History Month in England. What have you been seeing? Have you gone to any events?
Regarding the 1981 incident, I did hear something about it, but 81, I was just born, so I wasn't around at the time. Regarding the Black History Month, I've been so busy this week, I have not been able to go to any events whatsoever. But regarding the Liverpool riots, because there was riots in Liverpool, there were riots in Bristol, there were riots in Manchester. At that time, there was a lot of riots going on. But the Liverpool riot, because I missed the segment because I just come in late, I don't really know too much about it, but obviously it has to be, racism has to be the number one culprit at the list regarding why everything went down like that. But I've I missed that segment, and I've just been too busy this week to go to any events regarding Black history.
Right on. Yeah, I had not heard about the Liverpool one. I had heard about some of the others, and they even have documentaries, I think, on some of the things that happened in, like, Brixton in 84, and we talked about that, but this is the first time hearing about Liverpool. But it was the same thing, whether it's, you know, Charlotte, Brixton, Ferguson, LA, it's always the same thing, white supremacy.
Did you see that, I sent you on Facebook regarding the program that had with the racist incidents I had in Liverpool in the 70s. I sent you on Facebook.
Let's see. I'm looking at my Facebook. You just posted it on my page?
I sent it to you. It was about 3 weeks ago. Hmm. It was about the white youths and the black youths, the fights you used to get into in Liverpool round about the 70s. It was taken from YouTube. It was like an old kind of, I think it's a Granada broadcast they did. It's like a documentary. It's about 20 minutes long.
Wow. I am going to dig through to see if I can check that out. If it's in my message here, I will direct
it. There's a lot of cowbells going on there. A lot of cowbells going on.
That pretty common as well, unfortunately. And if they're cowbell and riot, that's fascinating. I'm going to dig through my messages here and see if I can find it.
I'll try to send it to you again. I'm going to look for it now and then send it to you again.
Okay, awesome. I appreciate it. I'll share on the page for folks who are listening. We'll nab all of our UK folks and then nab African 1884. So good to have you with us, Andrew. Glad you could join in. Are you familiar at all with the Liverpool rioting that happened in 81? And then it's Black History Month. Have you gone to any events? What have you seen regarding Black History Month in England?
Are we talking? Is that the Toxteth riots we're talking about in Liverpool?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I remember at the time. Although I was only a little kid, but I remember, you know, I remember it being on the news and all the rest of that. And since, you know, off and on. Since there's been references to it on the news and that kind of thing. Same, you know, as I understand it, I've only been to Liverpool once. That area, although, you know, though apparently it's been gentrified to some sort of degree. But, you know, similar to Brixton and other areas in London, that's had a high population of non-white people, i.e. black people. You know, the same kind of silly things, you know, the sus laws, you know, stop and search. All the same reasons that you had the Brixton riots in 81 and again a little bit later. You know, it's all these same reasons why, you know, why black people and other non-white people up in Liverpool did the same thing, really. It's just the same silly nonsense from the racist state, you know. It's the same reasons, you know, same reasons.
And with Black History Month, have you seen any themes or anything noteworthy?
There's quite a few things on in the theatre, actually. There's a play about Muhammad Ali's early life in Miami, believe it or not. I wanted to go on the weekend, but I didn't get a chance. I'm going to go next week now. I went to see some other play about a fictional play about it was on at the Royal Court Theatre at Sloane Square in Chelsea. What was interesting about it is it was set in the American Civil War, right? So North versus South, showing enslaved Africans, right? But what was interesting about it, though, is one line by a main white character who said, and this line was, I'm trying to remember the exact line, but I think the exact line was, "I am glad to be white. I am glad to be white." Repeated over and over again, very slowly. So that, you know, that I thought the whole play was really interesting, and whoever wrote that was really talking about the system of racism, white supremacy, in the way that it was written. I just found it really interesting. So I'm glad I went to watch it. You know, and you know, there were a lot of black people in the audience too. You know, I mean, there's loads of stuff on in London, as you can imagine. You know, what I don't want to do is just go and watch loads of singing and dancing. You know, that's not what I want to go and do. But there are events and things on that, you know, that cause black people to ask themselves questions, and you know, I find that to be important.
Amen. Absolutely. I saw Sadiq Khan. He was recently elected mayor of London. He's Muslim. I think he's non-white. I've never heard anyone say they think he's a white person, but I could be in error there. But Sadiq Khan, he was talking about Black History Month and saying how the critical importance of Africans and their contribution to London and England at large, and blah blah blah, and all the events that they were going to have, and this is great. We want them to feel welcome, and I think he might have even addressed some issues with racism as well. It was pretty noteworthy, I thought. African 1884, you are not in England; you are in Austria. So I don't know that you could speak to those issues. But do they even have Black History Month or anything like that in your part of the world?
Yeah, good question. We do have it. We try to celebrate it the last, say, 3-4 years. People are really getting into it and getting together and celebrating it. But this year, and I think also last year, we said, seeing that it was so hard to have an event, a Black History Month event, and be able to exclude white people. It's not possible because of the interracial relationships. So for the most part, you'd have a Black History Month event and you'd tell Africans just to come with other black friends and peers, but you end up finding an African who would bring his white wife or his white girlfriend, or vice versa, bring her white man or her white boyfriend, you know. So this time around, me and a couple of friends, we tried to organize Black History Month, but we saw that it's not possible. The same thing was with the Brother Umar event when he came here. It was so hard just to get black people alone in a space. You either find someone having to bring a white friend, a white girlfriend, or a white wife, or white husband, or something, you know. So this time around, we're not celebrating Black History Month, but people are aware of it, and just going to let it just be like that, you know. We're not going to have any events or any celebrations.
Wow. We had the echo on the cowbell effect. That was that was nice. That's amazing that sexual terrorism is that high that you can't even have an event that is, you know, a constructive event for black people without infiltrators being there. That is staggering.
Let me add something. I mean, the only thing, for example, like this month, we had, I originally come from Uganda, and Uganda celebrated its independence, and also Guinea-Conakry. And the same thing you have when you have these so-called, quote-unquote, independence celebrations. You have, it's just an event where you have white females coming looking for black men, or black men going there to look for white females, you know. So you would never have a space that's strictly predominant black. Same things with the churches and everything. So that's our reality here.
I just want to make sure I think in this context, there was a caller who asked on our Friday program, she asked about the promotion of tragic arrangements, sexual activity between whites and non-whites. And she said, why would they do that if whites fear white genetic annihilation? And I contend that whites, because they understand racism, white supremacy, they know that promoting this activity, they know that it makes their system stronger. It weakens non-white people, particularly black people. It weakens us and really neutralizes our efforts to solve this problem. They are in control of whether or not the sexual activity is going to take place. You see that. I think Dr. Welsing, she always used to say, even if it's a white woman and a black male, the white woman is more powerful, and she is the one that does the choosing about whether or not that's going to happen with what's going on over in Austria. If these white female race soldiers, they're going to these events looking for a black male, they are initiating. They are the ones with the power, and if they want to cut that off, they can do so easily. They know that it totally confuses our understanding of what it means to be white and what we should be doing to solve this problem. They understand that. We do not. All right. I got disconnected, and it threw everybody off my line, so I'm having to ring people back. My apologies for the... I don't know what that was. I didn't lose my internet connection for whatever reason. I just dropped. People got dropped from the line. But I am reconnecting everyone momentarily. Thank you for being patient. Okay. All right. I think have everybody back. Hopefully we will not have any more interruptions as we ride. The point I was making, though, as I'm adding folks back to the line. Okay, African 1884, good to have you back. Sorry for the technicalities, technical problems.
Yeah, I think all of us were in, all of us from Europe were all together.
Oh, okay.
Then you rang, I've sent to the call, and I think we're all sat dripping in now.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like folks are coming back in gradually. Great. Hopefully we will not lose anyone and not have any more disconnections. The point I was making when we got dropped, though, was that Black History Month, it's not at the same time. We brought this up before when we talked about Black History Month in England and it being in February in the U.S. It's in October in England. It not being at the same time, so it keeps Black people from coordinating, just imagining what it would be like if we all... And I know people have their concerns, myself included, about the way and what typically happens during Black History Month in the U.S., a lot of singing and clapping and dancing. But it could be a constructive event, and particularly if you think about it, if Black people around the world were all...
I'm getting... I don't know if to answer or decline this call from Andrew. So I decline it.
Yes, and I will, because I'm trying to call him on my line to add him back. Yeah, I don't know why it's not allowing me to add him back to this call. Well, I'll try again to see if I can get him back. At any rate, just, yeah, if we were all on the same, globally, if Black people all at the same time, I think we're engaged in some sort of constructive counter-racist activity around people that are classified as Black, I think that could be constructive. Moving forward, and I'll try to see if we can get the Andrew situation resolved, get him back on the program as well. I don't know why I'm not able to add him to this line. Anyway, moving forward, the situation in Haiti with Hurricane Matthew and the cholera epidemic that had been there previously, but this certainly exasperated the situation. I just wanted to ask, in terms of the coverage that you all are seeing in your part of the world, what are you seeing, and then kind of compare that to the coverage of like some of the terrorist attacks that happened in France, maybe even the nightclub shooting that happened here in Orlando, 53 people or approximately 50 people shot and killed. Just compare and contrast to the coverage that you've seen to some of the other major tragedies that have happened that did not involve a lot of Black people. African 1884, you want to go first?
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I don't think the rest are with us yet. The two colleagues from the UK?
I have Mr. Fox here, and I'm dialing both of them back again. I was calling both of them. We got one, and we're just waiting.
Hey, hello, I'm back.
Yes, ma'am. I was trying to call to get everybody back in after I got disconnected, and I think Andrew is the only person that I'm waiting on presently to get back, but I think we got everybody else back.
Okay.
Right on. African 1884, did you want to go with your response?
I just want to say something.
Hello, I'm in.
Oh, okay, great. We have everybody back. Appreciate it. I guess if you can use your mute button, Andrew.
Yep.
Okay, great. and then we'll hear from African 1884.
Yes, I just wanted to add to what you just said just now in regard to what happens during Black History Month. I don't think it's any different as it is in the US and here, because the same thing happens here, a lot of singing, clapping, and, you know, just looking at the history and celebrating what we did in the past, and not any more constructive suggestions in regard to what we should be doing now and in the future. So it's a lot of celebrating and romanticizing over our previous history.
Ashe, Ashe, did you have a response with regards to what's happening in Haiti, just what the coverage has been in Austria, that's where you are, and then how would you compare it to the coverage of, as I stated, some of the what they call terrorist attacks that happened in France or the nightclub shooting in Orlando this summer?
Well, the coverage of Haiti, the earthquake, it's not the hurricane and everything, it's not been covered as much. For the most part, it was just what's been dominating the news is just Trump, Hillary, the presidential elections, you know. So there's not much on Haiti. Not much.
Wow, that is embarrassing. Let's see. June, thoughts on Haiti? Just what is the coverage? I know you're in England. What's the coverage been there? And then, as I stated, a kind of a contrast to some of the other tragedies that have happened just this calendar year. I think the attacks that happened in France, the nightclub shooting in Orlando.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same as what you know, what the other guy was saying. You know, it's all about Trump and it's all about the election. You know, you might hear little snippets of it here and there, but from what I've seen, yeah. I mean, I don't have a TV, so I don't. You know, I don't get exposed to a lot of the stuff that goes on because it's just, you know, because it is another avenue for white supremacy to kind of brainwash us into what we should think and or not about things. So I choose not to do it. But what I do read on the internet and just from speaking to other people, it's the same. It's all dominated by politics and very little about Haiti. It's been very difficult watching all of that happening, actually. Very, very difficult. But yeah, it's the same old story. It's, you know, they dominate it, so they get to say what, you know, white supremacy gets to say what is important, quote unquote, news, and what isn't important. And if it's you know, black people, then it's not that important. So it's, yeah.
Absolutely. Let's see. Mr. Fox, same question to you, sir. Did you need to repeat it?
Sorry, please do.
For sure. Just what has been the coverage of the destruction in Haiti that you've seen? You're in England as well. What's been the coverage that you've seen? And then just kind of comparison to some of the other major tragedies that have happened within the last year or so, the terrorist attacks in France, Charlie Hebdo, or the nightclub shooting in Orlando, comparing that to the coverage of the hurricane in Haiti?
I'll have to just say White Lives Matter, because no way hate is gonna usurp the horrors what happened to white people in France and Charlie Hebdo and the other incidents. It's just the same kind of same narrative we always see, really. You know, black people in total disarray, and it's just sad to see, extremely sad to see. But just the media coverage, how it's always perceived, it's just the same narrative all the time. But it's just the same. It's just the same. It's not highlighted like to say, oh, we really must do something. It's just like, well, if you would like to donate, you can donate. But, you know, these people can't really help themselves. But when it comes to other stuff like what happens in Europe, you know, that pulls at the heartstring of the dominant society. So that's it, really.
Andrew, I think you'd be the last one on this question. Did you need the question repeated about the coverage of Haiti?
Yeah, I mean,
what I've seen on the TV is loads and loads and loads of destitute black people, a ravaged country, which I'm sure is I'm going to make an assumption that's true. The only reason I have a problem with that is because the fact that we never see anything positive about Haiti. Do you get what I mean? Like there's never ever been, the only coverage we see of that country is with poor black people, worse for wear, just scavenging in a whole heap of rubbish, and white people like putting that on TV, you know, and that's the issue that I have with the coverage of any black country on white TV. The coverage is always going to be the same. There's going to be zero that's positive. There's going to be nothing being built by those people. They're only happy to put images on black on TV of black mayhem. And
are you still there, Andrew?
I think we lost him.
So sorry, I got a call came through. I've cancelled it. But can you still hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yes, yeah, so it's just about black mayhem, and that's the issue that I have with it, basically.
I was thinking they had a big to-do in the New York Times about the hurricane and specifically the damage in Haiti. And the coverage was there. It was a massive report, but it was a lot of bright, like high-quality, high-res images of black suffering. And I mean, remember Mr. Fuller, he was talking about this was back closer to 2010 with the earthquake. And he was saying that racist man, racist woman, racist child, they absolutely adore having those type of images that they can project of, you know, black misery and suffering. Like, you know, you can go around and beat your fist to talk about you want to be independent and all that, but this is what you will be without us. They love promoting that sort of image. So I am conflicted about them just plastering more images of black people in misery. But I also see it as a massive act of racism to not talk about it at all. Because I think if this had happened in Norway or Germany or Australia, someplace where there are massive population of whites, it would be, oh man, this would be around the clock coverage and we've got to send money and invest and, you know, we've got to help out, you know, our brothers around. People would be going around with all the colors of that nation's flag on their computer screen or up for their Twitter avatar or what have you. I mean, I think it would just be a totally different response. If folks have questions that they want to ask our listeners, now that we got everybody back, the number 641-715-3640 and the code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Thomas in New York, did you have a question for any of our participants from around the world?
Not right at this very moment, Gus.
All right, on. Appreciate it. If other folks, if y'all have a question, something you would like to ask, feel free, get a hand up. Didn't folks have other commentary on Haiti, what they've seen with Haiti? Okay, folks, fine. I know I had been seeing I think it was a Canadian news outlet, and I saw it on some others as well, where there was like, there were reports of, what would be the best word? There were reports of caution, like beware. Lots of people were scammed. There was a lot of money donated to like the Red Cross and other organizations, even Hillary Clinton's or the Clinton's Foundation. And a lot of this information, I think, was accurate, where they were saying that these white-run organizations, different NGOs and what have you, that they were being fraudulent, that they were getting this money under pretense of helping black people in Haiti, and then they weren't doing that. They were doing, you know, God knows what else, buying hoverboards or whatever. But the help was not getting to the black people who were supposed to be getting this money. They reported that, and even, I said this before, even they had the news reports of whites going in and actually stealing black children after the earthquake in 2010.
That notwithstanding, they had these reports this week saying that, and they were saying that it was discouraging, or at least making some people hesitant to donate or help, because they were like, oh man, I don't want to be scammed. I don't want to, you know, get ripped off and then take my money and be using it to go on a cruise or whatever it is, and not helping the victims, black victims in Haiti of Hurricane Matthew. And I was just like, man, they got it again, where they can be reporting truth. I think it's Mr. Fuller. He has in the code book, he has a section that says it is using truth to promote correctness, where I think white racists, they can say some things that are true, but they're using it to promote racism, if that makes sense, if folks understand what I'm attempting to get at here. Anywho, our caller, June, we were speaking before the program, and I was saying that I think it's important, just because I know we talk a lot about the importance of parents sharing information about racism with your children. That's something that gets discouraged a lot, or a lot of people feel like they don't have the ability, the words, to be able to do that, and I think it's really important. June, we were talking before the program, and you were saying that you had an incident where you were talking with your child about racism, involved a little James Brown, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. What happened was, I got dressed to take her to school, and I had an African dress on, African print dress on, and she was kind of pulling this really weird face, and I said, "Why are you pulling that face?" And she got upset and started saying that she didn't want me to drop her off at school. She didn't want me to come and, you know, walk with her through the gate, because she was worried that what her white friends would say, that her white friends might not like it because of how I was dressed. And it was really hard hearing that. And I just thought, oh my God, she's this is her own internalized racism playing out. But because of my own awareness of this sort of stuff, I was able to talk to her about it and try to break it down and let her know that, you know, this is how racism works, and it will get in your brain and make you think that blackness or your culture or whatever it is wrong. And I said, it's, you know, it's completely normal that you have these feelings, because when, you know, we live in a system that's racist, and that's how racism works. And I said, the way to fight racism is, when you get that thought in your head, is to understand that that's racism, and then change what that thought is to get that negative thought out of your head. So I was thinking about, you know, how I could help her to change those thoughts. And then I actually created some affirmations. And the affirmation, I used James Brown, Say It Loud, as an example. So she'd never heard the song before. I'd never played it to her before. So I put it on the radio and on YouTube. And she absolutely went nuts. She absolutely loved it. She was jumping around. She just loved it. And I, you know, that was the best way that I could explain to her how to turn that around into something that was fun, and to make her understand that, you know, her blackness is not anything to be ashamed of, and to understand that that's how racism works. And she was so happy. She almost felt relieved. And she said sorry that she, you know, that she thought that. And I said, you don't even have to apologize. That's how we learn, you know. But I'm glad that you were able to be honest with me about it, because I said to her, you know, if you didn't tell me, but then just behaved, you know, a bit strange or whatever, then I wouldn't have understood why she was behaving that way. But I'm really glad that she was able to have that conversation with me, so then we could talk about it. That's how she's going to learn about racism. And this is one of the reasons why I love doing what I do as a you know, racial wellness educator. It's important for me to do this and practice it in my own home, because this stuff is going to keep coming up. And she's at school. I think there's maybe four or five people of colour in their class, and that's it. You know, a class of 30 children, and that's it. So it's going to happen. And if it's important for parents to understand this stuff and to learn about this stuff, because if the parents don't understand how it works, we can't teach our children. You know, I know so many parents that And I said this to my daughter as well, you know, not all black parents are going to be able to have this conversation, unfortunately, because they're not always aware. You know, they're not always aware how this works. She told me on another occasion, she came home with some homework about Cleopatra. She did this project on Egyptians and stuff like that. And I was trying to explain to her, you know, that how racism works. You know, you'll go on the internet and you know, Cleopatra is always portrayed as a white woman. And anyway, we did the project. She sent it back to school. She was happy with it. And then there was a little black guy in her class who had Cleopatra as a white woman. And she told him, you're going to have to change that because she's black. You have to change it. And he said, I don't care. And I felt so sad because clearly his parents didn't really understand it at that level. But I'm, you know, this is important. You know, it's important for our as parents to teach our children these things because, you know, they're going to learn that who they are is wrong, who they are is all the negative images that they see about themselves, or that somehow we don't contribute to history. If everything they see in their class at school is white people, they're not going to learn about how great black people are and what we've contributed to the world. So it's important. And I was really proud of my daughter that she did that because she was able to show him that, you know, actually, yeah, Cleopatra, she's not white. She's a black woman. So, yeah, it's parenting is so, this part of parenting is such an important part of it because it's, you know, I take that part of my parenting really seriously because I want to equip my daughter with tools that she can deal with racism. Ignoring it is not going to make it go away. I want her to learn not just about her blackness, but also what it's going to be like when she's a grown-up and tools to learn, understand how racism manifests within herself so then she can start doing her own personal work around this stuff so she understands it when she sees it and feels it. So important.
Outstanding. Context of white supremacy, A+ in attempted counter-racist parenting. You said, I wanted to be clear, that your daughter's classmate who was drawing Cleopatra and made her white, and she said, hey, that's, you know, that's incorrect. You have to change that. Cleopatra was black. Was this a black child?
It was a black child.
Wow.
Another black. Yeah.
That is, in my view, that is the victimization already at that young age.
Yeah.
And that, in my opinion, also is what happens if you don't talk to your child about racism. I think many, many of our parents who listen to this program over the years and black parents that I've talked to, they will, a common reason for not explaining racism to your child is that you don't want to make them hate white people, or, you know, I don't want them to be angry or upset or whatever they think is going to happen. What you just heard from June, that's what's going to happen if you ignore or pretend or do not address racism, white supremacy with your child. They are already being victimized. Whatever age they are already being victimized. They are already seeing racism, white supremacy. They just don't know how to explain what they're seeing or what's happening to them. You said your child in a school, I think it was of approximately 32 or so, that there are only like 4 or 5 non-white children?
Yeah, and there's only 3 black children. 3 black children in her class, yeah, of 30. So 5 non-white, 3 black.
What about the teachers or the faculty?
Most of them are white. The deputy head is black. And actually, it's interesting because they had a, you know, they have a Black History Month board at the school and in the reception. And their Black History Month display was mainly about slavery. It's about slavery. So I've committed myself that I'm going to change that next year. I'm going to have a conversation with the deputy head about it next year and see if I can create something for them, because it's unfair, and it's that negative act that, you know, the only thing that black people have done in history is be slaves. That's all we've done. And it's just, I don't want my daughter knows. She knows that that's not the truth. That's not all we've done. But the other black children need to see some other sort of representation. It's important. And I did speak to the head about some other issues about the books and stuff like that in her school. So that was, so she's open to it. She's open to it because I was able to get some more books about black issues and stuff like that for the school library, which was great. So I'm going to make sure I do that for next year, is to do something for black history because it's important. And it's just simple things like, I don't know, inventors or something that's just going to make them understand that black people were not just slaves. And it's difficult because it's white, and obviously the curriculum's white. So yeah, I think it's important. I'll just share one last tip actually that I do with my daughter with homework. Whenever she brings homework home, I always look for an opportunity to teach some black issue. So it doesn't matter what it is. Whatever she comes home with, I'll always look for an opportunity to teach some sort of black culture. So she's getting taught at the same time about herself, and she's completing the homework at the same time. She has to read, one of her homework commitments is that she has to read 5 books a week. And I said to her, don't bring any books home from the school library. You can read them at any time in choosing time or whatever. What we read at home, we're only going to read about black issues. We're going to read about culture. We're going to read about inventors. We're going to read about the amazing things, Mansa Musa, anything. That's the commitment that I have as a parent. So she's still reading her 5 books a week, but she's learning about herself. She's learning about herself. And it's an opportunity for me as well to learn about these things that I didn't learn as a child, because my parents, you know, they're sort of, you know, they're from old school generation, and they didn't have the same sort of schooling. You know, they were growing up in colonial rule and stuff like that. But I have an opportunity now, you know, as Maya Angelou says, when you know better, you do better. So I'm giving my daughter the opportunity to learn about herself and to learn about how great her culture is. And, you know, that's something that all parents can do. You know, there's loads of stuff. There's loads of books out there for children to read. And read with them. Be excited with them. Give them learn together. I think quite often parents can be ashamed, you know, don't want to talk about it because maybe they feel ashamed because they don't know. But if I don't know, I just say to my daughter, oh, come on, let's read it together. Let's do this. Let's do that. Learn together if you don't know. It's okay not to know. It's just about creating opportunities for not only to learn together, but also to bond with your child, to understand who your child is. There's so many positive things that can happen just by making that one decision to read together. So, yeah, I'm just encouraging all parents out there, please just read with your children. If you want to see your child's self-esteem rise, just doing that one thing, just doing that one thing with your children will change your relationship. Read with them. Choose books together. Pick a famous black person and go and research it. Read it. Research it together and read it. It's amazing what will happen if you do that one thing with your child. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm taking up loads of time, but yeah.
Super important. I know Dr. Welsing, she said all the time, reading is more important than watching television. So I know she would big time encourage black parents sitting down with your black child and reading to them, having the television off and everything, and just sitting quietly and reading some constructive material with your offspring. Like, that is phenomenal. Do we, any of our other folks that are with us, do we have any other black parents on the line with us presently?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, earlier this week, my daughter had to do a project. It was based off of a book. I think it was called Kindred. It was about a black lady who was married to a white man and went back in time as a slave, and they ended up having to help her ancestors, I guess, survive so that she would be born. And she didn't really elaborate a lot on it. However, she had to tie this book into one of three things, how race and things happened in three places outside of the United States, and she had to choose one of them. So we chose Brazil, and I kind of helped her with the report. And, of course, I didn't read the book, but as I read her report, you know, and she went through the articles about Brazil, I kind of had to scrap it. You know, let's start over here. Okay? I had to explain to her that, you know, the colorism that takes place is due to the rape of during slavery time. And it's very important that she had to have that in her paper. And as I was explaining it to her, she got it. She wrote a very good paper. I thought it was very accurate, the way she worded it. It's explaining slavery here, how it has ended, and also bringing into a lot of the aspects in Brazil are due to the rape and the way that lighter skinned people are put on a higher pedestal. And, you know, but her mission paper had nothing to do with that. I mean, it was just like, wow, you know, I was glad I was able to help her with that.
That's wild. I've read that book like a couple times. We even did a program on that book like about 5 years ago. Octavia,
yeah, she was reading it. It sounded familiar. I'm like, I've heard about this. I was even able to tell her parts about it, but I couldn't remember where I got it from, so I'll probably listen to that program.
Yeah, for our listener, it's a very popular work of science fiction. Octavia Butler, she's a black female, and she's passed away now, but she incidentally lived here in Washington State. She talked about the racism she experienced as a black female author in science fiction, which is like a super white male dominated genre. But that book specifically is very, very popular. It's required reading in a lot of schools, even a lot of colleges. The one line that I always point out when that book comes up, the main character, Dana, she has to go back in time on a plantation, I think, in Maryland. And it's this little white boy that she has to go back. Whenever he gets in trouble, she has to go back to help him. And he gets older, like, as she continues to go back. So we first meet him, I think he's like 4 or 5, and then eventually he's like in his 20s, and so he's running the plantation now. But he still comes back. Dana still goes back to help him whenever. So the last time he goes, she has to be a slave when she goes back. So she has to work and do whatever else. Like, sometimes she gets stuck there for like, you know, weeks at a time. So she has to be a slave and be whipped and everything else. And eventually Rufus, the little child that she has been helping and taking care of and nursing him back to health, she reads to him, feeds him, sleeps in the same room with him to take care of him, like she's, you know, helped raise him. He gets older and he tries to rape her, and she fights back and kills him. That's kind of the climax of the book. But anyway, the line that I always point out is she's married to a white man. One of the times when she comes back and she's telling her white husband, who I think is named Kevin, she's telling him about what she endured, and she's talking about how racist Rufus was being, the little white boy that racist that she's taking care of. And her husband Kevin says, because I think Rufus says something to the effect of, "You belong to me," or something like that. And her husband, her white husband Kevin, he says, "Oh wow, that sounds like something I would say." And I always bring that up, like, is she implying a similarity between Rufus, eventual plantation enslaving rapist white man, and Kevin, her husband? Is she implying a connection between the two? And people, you know, don't want to answer that question. Anyway, do we have other black parents with us to comment? Because I thought that was really important, kind of what June was sharing. Any other black parents?
Yep, I'm a black parent. I've got a little boy, basically. He doesn't live with me now. Basically, lives with his mom. But what I would say is this, though. I was always very conscious about making sure that basically that all the books I bought him had black people or black youngsters as the central character. That's quite important if you're talking about building a positive self-identification in black children. So, and everything, you see, and every, you see, what I was very, yes, so everything they have up on the wall, all the books that they have, all the literature that they have, must, in my opinion, have them as being the central characters. I got a friend who has a, runs a black bookstore. She does these bookstores up and down the country, not only at black events, but at all events, you know, like, she, you know, that's her business, right? What she said of said to me of white parents is that they would come and look at her books, because obviously all the books are about black people, should, you know, and black kids, you know, the black children's books. So, she, you know, white parents, white women would come and look at her books and say, oh, that's great. But none of them would ever buy any black books, and any black books that featured black children as being the central characters, right? So what you see, the difference between us and white parents is that white parents, white women, they only buy their book, their children books that focus on white people. You got some white liberals that buy their kids black dolls and this kind of thing, but the majority would never even think of doing anything like that, right? Whereas far too many of us, we would just buy our children any old book. Our focus is that our children learn to read, right? But what we don't understand is that everything is cultural. So what's been passed along through white books that have white people as the central characters is other messages. We don't understand that. White women do. They do understand that. They are, and if it's true that women are the first teachers of children, which I believe, then white women are very cognizant of what they're trying to teach their children. We are not cognizant of what we're trying to teach our children, or at least we're trying to teach them to read and write, right? But that's not all white people are trying to teach their kids, their children, you know. So that's what I was always very cognizant of when I was buying literature for him. You know, that's not my, all of that's been taken out of my hands now. I no longer have the responsibility of buying him anything at the end of the day. And that's a whole nother discussion. At the end of the day, I don't know how it is in America, but in this country, it's not always within, as a black man anyway, it's not always within your, how can I put it? It's not always within your authority to be buying or doing anything for your son. And effectively, you know, so I better leave it there. So that's just a little bit of it anyway. But the whole idea of... the whole idea of making sure, you know, it goes back to that black doll, white doll thing that was on the, that's on the internet. You know, Dr. Adebayo, a media, black media guy here, he did the same thing with his wife, the singer Carol Thompson, did the same study. And we got the same, you know, they got the same result over here. You know, a load of black five-year-olds thinking that they're rubbish. Do you get what I mean? And that's what you end up with if you don't educate your children as to their self-worth on purpose. It's got to be on purpose. We need to do it on purpose, because that's what white people are doing. White people are educating their children, right, as to their self-worth, white over non-white. That's the equation. They're doing that on purpose, and they're doing it every day. And I see it in the children that I teach every day. The ones, you know, they're just learning to be racist, right? And you could see their brains working. I can hear their brains working as a teacher, and that's the, and but we're not doing that. Do you know what I mean? I'll leave it there.
Wow. Definitely. Thank you for sharing. And I think just what you said in terms of authority or lack thereof as an attempted black father, I think that's why Mr. Fuller used the term attempted parents in the system. Just being honest that if you are a victim of white supremacy, you do not qualify as a parent, mother or father, because whites can come in and do whatever they want, including take your life or take your child, whatever the case may be. I think that is demonstrated in Kindred as well, unfortunately. Do we have any other parents before we move? Any other parents with us?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, hi. I'm a parent. I have two children. One is an adult and one is not. I found it a little easier dealing with racism with my, well, it's I guess it's tricky because they come in different, they come from both angles with the children. I noticed with the little boys, they try to put them on medication early. And with the girls, if you put them in a girl power mode, they'll always pick girl first versus black. So that kind of thing. With my son, when this program started, he started participating. I think they used on this program, they used to have, sometimes they would have a children's program. So they would have the children doing, watching little movies and looking for the racism in that. So that's the first time that I really sat down with my child, just going through, different aspects on television that could show him racism or could be negative towards him visually. And he was very talkative, but he picked up a lot of stuff. So just thereafter, we would just continue to do that. And he would continue to find, oh, I was watching this and this and this. And so just little things like that, that helped. He participates in this now as a teenager, and that helps because it keeps him current. And then the host, he's always great because he includes things that include him. So that helps me as far as just keeping him on point with racism and different movies, documentaries. I make him watch, like, he loves Tariq. He's been listening to Tariq for just since he was a little. But just little things that keep him on point, different documentaries. If he has to do a play, I remember one time he had to do Martin Luther King Jr. He had to play Martin Luther King. So I didn't want the version that the school gives. I pulled up old clippings from back with the boycott, and I would make him listen to that just so he can get a feel of the character. Just little things that you do, well, I would do. And it kind of helped me because he's not that bad right now, and he's still learning, and he's still willing to learn. So, and my daughter, too, she's an adult, but she's still willing to learn and receive. So it works out. And thank you for taking my call.
For sure. Thank you for sharing. Her young son, Black Scholar, he dials in pretty regularly, telling us about some of the things he observes at school. And yesterday, I think he just dialed in, gave us his review of Nate Parker's The Birth of a Nation. Always enjoy hearing his updates, hearing from younger Black people who are less confused and still learning. Love that as well about racism and all things related. Any other parents? Just making sure. Any other parents with us? Right on. Exhausted all of the parents. The caller at 2648, did you have a question? 2648?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I have a question for the panel. How did they depict African Americans on the television screen? How did they depict this?
I think we can. Everybody can take a shot at that one. Let's see. African 1884, you want to go first? How are African Americans depicted, I guess, in media, television, or wherever else over there?
Well, it's more or less like people here tend to look at African Americans within the context of just doing rap music and engaging in sports and entertainment. The only exception was Barack Obama, as someone who went into the political arena and became the U.S. president. Overall, within the society and on the streets, African Americans kind of like get a pass in regard to the way they're treated by other white people. So there's this differentiation in that if you're from Africa, the continental African, and African American here, white people perceive you differently. You know, so when you have the American attached to the African, then white people here perceive you differently. But if you have just the African to your identity, then they tend to, I guess, we're both mistreated, African Americans, but they give a kind of like a privilege, you know, they treat African Americans differently. Just on the basis of the American word attached to that. But there's racial profiling from the police because we're all black, you know. But if they stop a black person, the person says, I'm an African American and I'm going to run to the American embassy, that's a different story. But if they stop an African and says, a Nigerian, and he's going to go to the Nigerian embassy, then that has, they don't perceive that as having a lot of consequences.
Oh, I'm echoing a little bit. I'm not sure where that's coming from. Okay, I don't hear it as much now. Let's go, Mr. Fox, your perception. You're in England. The way African Americans are portrayed, television, media?
I would have to say just a pinnacle of entertainment. So that would be music, that would be sports. But I would see African Americans, when they leave America, they get treated better, obviously, than they do in America. They're still black, so they'll be seen as a black person. But depending where you go, like within Europe, you have certain white people can tell the difference between someone who's coming over from Africa by the way how they dress, the American way they might carry themselves, and then someone who might be from either England or the US. And then with on speaking to them, when they hear the accent, they will be treated a lot better because America has the monopoly on entertainment around the world. So Americans in general, wherever they go, they will be treated kind of better than anyone else, depending on the person they're actually speaking to. If it's a country they've just invaded, well, that's going to go totally different. But black Americans, they're seen merely as the pinnacle of entertainment, rap, the sports mm-hmm. out there. So, that's how it's seen.
June, your thoughts, how African Americans are presented or treated, portrayed?
Yeah, just kind of echoing what everyone else was saying, really. You know, the whole entertainment thing, the rapper thing, that's kind of, you know, mainly what, that's kind of like quite a dominant, you know, image that we see over here. And it's interesting because they've got a talent, well, quote-unquote talent show in the UK at the moment, and there's this woman, I don't know if you've heard about this, but this white woman called Honey G, that's kind of depicting, they're saying that she's a modern day blackface because her whole act is just mimicking black culture. You know, she dances around in like a gold tracksuit. She has like gold, you know, loads of gold jewelry around her neck, and she wears a baseball cap with sunglasses, and her hand gestures are all, you know, mimicking that whole thing. So yeah, it's interesting, you know, and the British public find it hilarious that she's still in the program, because she's actually rubbish, but all the white people think that she's fantastic. But yeah, that's kind of the dominant thing that I see over here that people kind of tend to focus on. And I mean, it's in some respects it's quite good seeing people like Oprah and stuff like that who are doing what they're doing. But then at the same time, you know, those people are not really talking about white supremacy. And I think in that respect, I think, you know, English people kind of like the kind of Oprahs of this world, the kind of, you know, the black mammies that will, you know, that will do that. Oh, you know, everybody's kumbaya love. You know, yes, there's problems, but, you know, if you just, you know, pull up your bootstraps and kind of get on with it, then you know, we all love each other and sit together and stuff, then it'll be all okay. It's tricky. It's tricky. But, yeah, I think, you know, for me, what I see personally is a lot of the entertainment thing is the dominant thing. And, yeah, it's kind of like the Oprah types that tend to be more accepted than the black people that kind of show up a lot more. People like Akala and stuff like that, then, yeah, I mean, he's respected over here for what he does, but he doesn't get, you know, he doesn't get as much mainstream exposure because of what he's about. I'm sure he's more well received over in the States. Is he not? Have you seen him a lot over there? Or
He's been a guest on our program, and
great.
I think he, I know when he visited with us, it was about 2 years ago, he was coming to the States to do some different spots. I know he did some interviews statewide. I don't know how well he's known here in the States, but I know he has come over. I know people are aware of his work and what have you.
Okay.
He's been on Black TV recently, within the past, I but 2 to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I think I saw that. I think, Andrew, you were the last one. Did you want to respond how African-Americans are portrayed?
Yeah. It's a mixed bag, really, because you got the showcase blacks, right? So you got people like Will Smith and his wife who, there's, you know, when the Oscars were on, it was well known that they were not happy because, you know, Will Smith was on the Graham Norton show. I think he was on the Graham Norton show, basically telling it how it is. You know, just from his point of view, saying how African Americans don't get a look in when it comes to the Oscars. So there's the whole thing about you know, it's the whole thing about well-to-do blacks, you know, earning money, doing this, that, and the other. You know, mainly in entertainment, I suppose. And then there's these pictures of black men getting shot and killed. And all the rest of that, you know, quite big stories over here of how black men are getting shot and killed. And then there's the black masses, you know, the black masses just who just live in mud, who just live in rubbish, basically. And it sort of veers between these things, you know, these sort of areas. That's from what I can see. And now and again, no, in fact, that's it. You know, that's the view of African Americans in this country. I know for a fact that until recently, African Americans didn't even know that we existed, that black people existed in England, right? So, you know, I've been told that it's quite a new thing to know that there's black people living in England, which I totally understand, because I suppose, you know, how would you know that we are here? Do you know what I mean?
But it was Lennox Lewis, and that's about it. yes, sir.
Yes, I mean, this is a very good conversation, and it brings me back just to think about the experience that Nina Simone and James Baldwin had when they left the U.S. America and came to Europe. You know, so we have to understand how white supremacy works. When they came over to Europe, they kind of like were perceived as exotics, but not treated harshly as they were being treated in the U.S., you know. But I think what they failed to realize is that the system was a global system, and so in the way it worked, is not the way it does work in the U.S., you know. So for the most part, I think that when they came to the U.S., when they came to Europe from the U.S., they felt much more comfortable than when they did feel in America, you know. But not knowing that at that point when they're in Europe, Europe was still having direct oppressive structures in Africa and other parts of the world and everything, you know. So that's interesting just to point out from my point of view.
Absolutely. There's a lot of writing. Oh, I'm still echoing over. Okay. There's a lot of writing from different black expatriates who left the U.S. and went wherever they went, frequently Europe, during that time period. I think Langston Hughes might have also spent some time abroad, but there were a lot of, particularly black entertainers, who left and went abroad, particularly if they were experiencing racism here, that was hampering their career. I think even Paul Robeson spent some time, or I think that's where he was got the acid attack that ended up, you know, causing him a lot of health problems. But yeah, and just as African 1884 said, not understanding the global system of white supremacy, thinking that racism is just in the U.S. and it doesn't exist elsewhere, or, you know, they're more enlightened in France or whatever, just a lot of that just confusion about it being a global system. The caller at 4789, did you have a question?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just had a question for the guests and you as well, Gus, about like timing. Like I was wondering, in terms of like seeing all the things that are happening like in South Africa, in terms of like the fees must fall, and then the girls with their hair, and then also here in the U.S. With the Black Lives Matter, and also like Black Lives Matter Toronto. I'm wondering like what do people think about timing? Because I know like the civil rights movement happened at the same time with like independence all over in like African countries. Do people find that suspicious, or do people just think it's just coincidence?
Folks have a thought on that about the timing, I guess, of different events related to racism, white supremacy?
Sorry, I missed the question.
Exactly. You can repeat the question. Sorry about that.
If I understood the question correctly, he was saying just what are your thoughts on timing with Black Lives Matter happening in the U.S. At the same time as the fees must fall in South Africa, and then the incident that happened at the Pretoria Girls' School where they were protesting the racist hair policies that were impacting black female students in South Africa, and then the Black Lives Matter Toronto happening at the same time that kind of only addressing racism. They've even had Black Lives Matter over in the UK, just kind of all these events happening at the same time worldwide addressing racism, and it even paralleling somewhat in the 1960s when you had the civil rights movement here and the movements for independence on the continent. What do people think just about the timing of different responses to racism?
Yeah, what I think is that I don't see any link between any of those things. I don't necessarily see any link whatsoever between the so-called Black Lives Matter movement and anything and any kind of liberationary movement in Africa. I don't see that the politics are the same politics. For a start, unless I'm incorrect, I've not heard anything from the Black Lives Matter movement saying anything about ending white supremacy at all. I've not heard anybody in the Black Lives Matter movement come out and link what they are doing. And maybe they do, and I've just not heard it. But I've not heard them come out and link anything they're doing there to any kind of to taking land away from white people or power away from white people in South or Southern Africa or anything like that. I've just not heard it. And what I would say also is this. It's good to see South African students doing what they're doing. However, I'm not sure that, you know, to me anyway, the big difference between the liberationary struggles of the 60s in Africa is that they were aware that white people were directly the oppressors, by and large, right? And whereas, you know, I think there was more of an understanding of racism, white supremacy as well, right? I'm not so sure that that's the case with young people, even young students in Southern Africa. I'm not sure that that's the case with them, and I'm not sure that black people of the Black Lives Matter movement want to see an end to racism, white supremacy. I'm not so sure that they articulate it in that manner. If they do, I've not necessarily heard it. And so I don't necessarily see a link between the politics of the two groups. And that's what's important. I don't see a link. I don't see any link there. You know, liberationary struggles of the 60s have got more in common with Pan-African movements of today, right, than Black Lives Matter movement has got in common with so that's kind of like the way I see it anyway.
Anybody else want to respond to that question?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I just pick up from what the gentleman just said, I don't see any direct correlation in that. I could say that, okay, right now, Black people are waking up all over the world and they're trying to make a change. I don't see no correlation. But then again, just like to what I keep on emphasizing so much is that we have to, understand that the system is global and stretch that hashtag Black Lives Matter everywhere, regardless. This also refers to the hurricane in Haiti. That's just the experience that we're having right now as victims of racism and supremacy.
There was another person that dialed in, just trying to get in some of our other callers. The person at 4243, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Gus, and thank you to the panel and the listeners. My question is, I was actually discussing with my friend just talking about like how we didn't actually in the States didn't learn about Black American history, and I was just wondering if that's the same with you all in different countries, like let's say for like in the UK or in England, are you only taught about the white Europeans' history and not how the Black Europeans' history kind of correlated with that and so on.
Folks want to respond to that one?
Yeah, hi, it's June. Yeah, I'd respond to that, actually. It's the same. The curriculum is dominated by European history, and the only Black history that's taught is, of course, slavery. And Dr. Martin Luther King is in there, and that's it. That's it. There's not really very much in there. My daughter came home the other day, sort of saying that they did some stuff with Nelson Mandela. But by and large, the curriculum doesn't address Black history, African history, Black history, anything really, at all. Which is all the more important again. Why parents have to take responsibility and teach our own children. Do homeschooling, do Saturday school, whatever it takes to make sure our children understand and learn about themselves, because the school system is not set up to teach us about our history. So it is important that we do it ourselves. Yeah. I don't know if anybody else has had any experience of that, but yeah, that's how it is with my daughter's school and what I was
taught. Yeah, I mean, when I went to school, I'm 48 years old, when I went to school here, was it 80 to 85, the only bit of African or Black history we did was just studying the slave, the diagram of the bottom of the slave boat. And we did that in our history class. That's the only bit of anything linked to Black, explicitly linked to Black people, that anyone did for years in this country, actually. More recently, one of my first school that I taught at, they did, the white teachers, did Malcolm X and they did this, that and the other, and they did some other stuff. And that's, that's great. But when I went to school, that's what I did. I know you want to go on, Gus, but the whole thing about in this country, there's the whole thing about Black people looking to set up schools, not just Saturday schools, but Monday to Friday, 8 o'clock to 3:30, full on secondary schools, what we call secondary schools in this country. There's been the whole free school thing. The Tory government brought in the whole thing about anybody can start up and get funding for what the government called free schools. They quickly, when they realised the types of people that were going to be looking to do it, they quickly closed the doors on that one. Okay. I heard on one of your broadcasts, you talking about a Black-run school somewhere in the States. I can't remember where that was. I was, you know, you can go around, but it'd be interesting for us over here to understand the success. The success is the success rate of black people opening up their own schools in America. That's what I'd like to know.
For sure. I'm going to see if we can get our one more caller in before we wrap up. This program is shorter than our typical broadcast, remind folks. The caller at 6353, did you have a question you wanted to get in?
Yes, good afternoon. Well, hello, Gus, and to all the listeners and callers, and to the international group there. I had a question in the current political climate that you all spoke that you are aware of occurring right now in the United States. I wonder if there's been an uptick in bullying and hostility. I think this is a global analysis because of the system of racism, white supremacy. And I was curious about that. That's for the group. Have you noticed an uptick in bullying and hostility toward black people in particular? Not, well, we know about the immigration, et cetera, but just in light of the political stance being taken right now over here. Another question, I had an observation that at one point there was a lot of discussion around the world, especially in Europe, regarding austerity. I haven't heard a lot about that lately, and I wondered, did that just take a backseat to the Brexit movement? And I just haven't heard much about it. Another question I have is, this is for June.
We have limited time, so probably won't be able to get to all three because this is only a 90-minute program. What was your question? And we'll see if we can get June and maybe response to the other one. What was your question for June?
The more important question is for Andrew regarding Carlos Acosta, a ballet dancer from Cuba who's now retiring due to injuries. He's been a part of the Royal Ballet, et cetera, et cetera, and has not gotten the recognition that he truly deserves. Those are my questions. Thank you, guys.
Andrew, did you want to?
Yeah, I've heard of this ballet dancer. I know he's coming up to retiring, isn't he? And I've read about him as well. I've never seen him dance. I've just read about him. I don't know. Now, correct me. As I understand it, he does European-style ballet dancing. I might be wrong about that, but I think that's the style of dance that he did. Before I come and answer that question as to what I think about him, recently you've had the Alvin Ali American Dance Company in this country. I don't know if you guys have, well, I'm assuming you guys have all heard of that dance company. I went to watch them about a month ago. Great. I thought it was brilliant. Brilliant in the sense that they do a style of dance which is classical. Their own take of European on European sort of ballet dancing, but it's an African American dance form. Now, for me personally, that is what I'm all for. I'm all for Africans doing what Africans do. Do you understand?
Can I just say that Carlos Acosta is black?
Oh yeah, I know that.
Okay.
And so this is why I need to know, because as I said, I've never seen him dance, read about him. As I understand it, he does unless I'm incorrect, I would like to be incorrect on this one. As I understand it, he does a European form of dance, unless I'm incorrect. Okay.
That's correct. A part of that dance is with the Royal Ballet of England.
That's right. So, you see, my question is this. I'm sure he's absolutely brilliantly talented. If I were to tell young Africans to go and watch some dance, I would go and tell them to go and watch the Alvin Ali Dance Company or another African-inspired dance company. That's personally what I would do. I'm sure he's absolutely fantastic, but I personally wouldn't send young African children to go and watch an African performing classical music, performing classic European style dance, no matter what, no matter how good they are. I personally wouldn't do that. And I'm sure he is absolutely outstanding. But for me, I'd recommend they go and watch anything that is African or black inspired, or go and watch some break dancing. that's personally what I would do.
Well, can I add before I add the line that these things are not mutually exclusive? Just something to think about, and I'll mute my line.
To the first question that was asked, in terms of violence, I'm thinking direct racist violence. They had a report, new data reveal increase in hate crimes after UK Brexit vote. This was reported on NPR earlier within the last 5 days. European embassies in the United Kingdom logged dozens of incidents of suspected hate crime and abuse against their citizens after the Brexit vote. According to figures obtained by The Guardian, the newspaper said the vast majority of victims were from Eastern Europe, and Poles were targeted more than all other nationalities combined. To the first question that she added, I know there have been many, many reports of increased violence since the Brexit vote against darker people, black people. Even reporters have caught it, where they've been out reporting on this and they happen to be non-white and they got abused too by just random whites who were passing them on the street. We did our 90 minutes plus, actually, for the broadcast. We will be here again tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, I guess, for folks, if you're across the pond and you would like to tune in, the live broadcast time would be 1 a.m. So I guess that would be Tuesday morning. Tuesday morning at 1 a.m. we'll be on live. Mary Beth Gassman, she's a white professor in Pennsylvania. She wrote an article about how whites at historically white academic institutions, they do not want black faculty members, black professors at their institutions, and she just spilled the beans about the ways that they go about making sure that they do not hire black people for those jobs, regardless of whether or not they're qualified. She'll be here tomorrow. We'll talk about that report and some of her other views on racism. We'll be here for the rest of the week. Just drop us an email if you have any questions, comments, confusion, problems finding material in the archives, or if you have a guest suggestion, untiljustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Huge thanks to all the folks for dialing in. Anything folks wanted to make sure they get in briefly before we exit? Final comment? Want to get in before we leave?
Hi, yeah, it's June. Yeah, I just wanted to share that, obviously we've kind of touched a little bit on Dr. Wilson, but I just wanted to share that I'm going to be launching a book club next year the ISIS papers. It's going to be with a twist. It's going to give people an opportunity to actually not just learn about racism, but to learn about how racism impacts them personally, how to process racial pain, just understanding a lot more around the psychological aspect of how racism impacts them personally. I know we've spoken a little bit about this already, Gus. So yeah, I'm hoping to launch this next year. So if anybody's interested in that, I have actually set up a place where you can leave your email address so I can inform you when it goes live, when it launches. And the web address is www.theisispapersbookclub.com. That's www.theisispapersbookclub.com. Thanks.
Outstanding. I'll post that on our Facebook page as well, www.theisispapersbookclub.com. Anybody else? Final word before we wrap things up? Anything else? Are folks satisfied? Anything else folks want to make sure they get in? I will assume folks are satisfied. We will be here every day for the next week. So tune in the archives. If you can't tune in live, everything will be archived, including this program. Certainly was a pleasure hearing from all of our listeners and participants. African 1884, June, Mr. Fox, Andrew, was great hearing from everyone. I know Mary and Lorraine was hoping that they would be joining us this week as well. They had other things happening, but we'll try to get them in We do it again next month. It's always the third Sunday of every month. It's our Global Sunday Talk on Racism. With that, we will wrap things up. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Our conduct at all times should reflect that war is being waged against black people. That should be demonstrated in our thought, speech, action, and in my view, promoting sobriety. I think that would help us solve a lot of problems and help us minimize some of the problems that happen to us under the system of white supremacy. With that, we will wrap things. Thanks again to everyone who participated. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Sunday, I guess, for folks over there, Sunday evening, Sunday afternoon, wherever you happen to be at listening to the broadcast. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
no
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.